There was a request from people listening online that I repeat the questions. I think they didn't get over here. So if you ask a question, I'll repeat it. It's not because I'm questioning your statements. I'm just for the people to hear it on the recorder. Okay, once again, I want to thank Karen and Jake Abelevitz for sponsoring this morning's weekly Locks and Learn in memory of Jake's beloved parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram, and Karen's brother, Yehoshua ben Shimon Dov. Their neshamas should have a continued aliyah. Okay, so let's jump in. Everybody have sheets? You should have two sheets. Don't have two sheets, raise your hand. Okay, so we're good. So we're going to jump into first read the Mishnah, and then we're going to back up and unpack it pretty much in a lot of detail. So Shimon HaTzadik, this is the second Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Shimon HaTzadik haya mishayarei Knesset HaGdola. He was of the leftovers, the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, who we spoke about at length last week. Hu haya Omer, and we'll see what that historical context has to do in a moment. But let's first see what he says. Hu haya Omer, he used to say, Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omed, that the world rests or is stands on three things, three pillars, ala Torah, v'al ha'avoda, v'al gemilos chasadim, on Torah, on worship, and on practice of kindness. Famous Mishnah. Let's try to get a deeper understanding of it. So first we're going to look into the historical context. So do you remember last week when we talked about the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, what year are we talking about, ish? It could be off by 100 or so years, that's okay. Around 400 BCE. He's towards the end of this line, so we'll see as to what date we're going to give him in a moment. But around 400 CE, it is after the first Korban, beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash already being built or been built. So we do have a Beis HaMikdash around during the time of Shimon HaTzadik. He actually acts as the Kohen Gadol, as we'll see in a few sources later on. So let's just jump into source number two here. It's a fascinating Gemara which depicts an encounter between Shimon HaTzadik and Alexander the Great. So now let's get a little bit of a more guess on the historical date. If we're talking about an encounter between him and Alexander the Great, can we get any history people here? When did Alexander the Great live? No? Nothing? 1957, close. So we're talking around the 300s or so. For some reason, the date 333 is popping into my head. I think that's when he conquered a lot of stuff, but I'm not sure. It's going back to 10th grade with Mr. Rothbart. So we're talking about around middle of the 300s, and again, he's the end of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. So this is an encounter. Whether or not this encounter historically happened, again, is somewhat questionable, but definitely the Gemara depicts it as definitely a message to take away from it. So let's see source number two. It's Gemara in Yuma. Be'esrim v'chamisha b'teves yom har grizimhu. So there's a bunch of days. It's something called Megillas Tainis, which we don't practice nowadays, but there's a bunch of dates that back in the times of Chazal, that these were like happy dates that you wouldn't do hespedim on, or you wouldn't be allowed to fast on, because they're happy things that happened on these days. So it's like you go to a shtibol and they don't say tachanun, so it's sort of like, you know, a list of the Rebbe's, but here's a list of various different good, happy dates, things that happen that we don't fast, and this one specifically, we don't do a hesped either. So what happened on this day? What's so great about this day? The 25th of Teves. Yom shebikshu kusiyim es beis elkeinu mi'alexandros mokdon lachribo v'nasnu lahem. So apparently the kusiyim, who were the enemies of the Jewish people, they were put into Eretz Yisrael after the first, when all of the 10 tribes got kicked out in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash. So Ashur put in these Kuthians to populate the land. So they were basically these arch enemies of the Jewish people at the time, and they beseeched Alexander the Great to basically destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and he gave them permission. I'm just going to summarize from the English just to save some time because we are going to run out of time eventually. Whereupon some people came and informed Shimon HaTzadik. So they told Simon the Just, what did he do? He put on the priestly garments, robed himself in priestly garments. Some of the noblemen of Israel went with him carrying fiery torches in their hands. They walked all the night, some walking on one side and others on the other side until the dawn rose. When the dawn rose, he, Alexander, said to them, who are these, the Samaritans? They answered, the Jews who rebelled against you. As he reached Antipatris, the sun having shone forth, they met. When he saw Shimon the Just, he descended from his carriage. This is Alexander. Sees Shimon HaTzadik, goes down from his own carriage and bowed down before Shimon HaTzadik. They said to him, they said to Alexander, a great king like yourself should bow down before the Jew. He answered, his image, it is which wins for me in all my battles. So basically he sees his image and that either inspires him or is a good luck charm perhaps and allows him to Alexander to win all of his battles. He said to them, what have you come for? They said, is it possible the star worshipper should mislead you to destroy the house wherein prayers are said for you and your kingdom, that it never be destroyed? In the Beis HaMikdash, we daven for you, Alexander, and you want to destroy this Beis HaMikdash? He said to them, who are these? They said to him, these are the Kuthians who stand before you. He said, they are delivered into your hands. At once they perforated their heels, tied them to the tails of the horses, and dragged them over the thorns and thistles until they came to Mount Gerizim, which they plowed and planted with vegetables. Mount Gerizim is where the Kuthians, quote-unquote, temple was, and basically Alexander gave them, similar to the Perm story to an extent, Alexander gave them the right to go and destroy all the Kuthians. So we were saved because Shimon HaTzadik stood up and countered Alexander. Alexander shows him this deference, this respect, and then he allows them to destroy the Kuthians instead of the Kuthians destroying the Beis HaMikdash. So right here, again, the purpose of bringing in this source number one is to show this context within the time period and what's going on with the Jewish people during the times when Alexander the Great is rising to power. So what are we encountering? What cultural influences are happening that are going to influence us as Jews in Eretz Yisrael? So there's a lot of Greek philosophy. There's a lot of all that comes with Hellenism coming, and we're encountering it. And eventually it's going to lead to the Hanukkah story, which is going to be another 100 or so years later on down the road. But this is what's going on in the air during Shimon HaTzadik's time. If you look at source number 3, this brings us back to last week's shir, where we talked about the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. Don't worry if you weren't here. It's not essential that you get it, but if you were here, it adds another layer. Last week we spoke about prophecy stopping. So what was the connection between prophecy stopping last week? Remember, we tied it to after Chagai Zecharia Malachi, prophecy stops. Here in this source, Seder Olam Rabba, they tie it to something slightly different, around the same time period. And the rough he-goat is the king of Greece. He is the first king. That's a pasuk from Daniel. And a mighty king shall stand up, and when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken. Who is this talking about? This is Alexander of Macedonia, who reigned for 12 years. Until then, the prophets prophesied with the divine spirit. From this time onward, incline your ears and hear the words of the wise. So this source specifically says, what is the trigger to the end of prophecy? The rise of Alexander the Great. So what about this rise of Alexander the Great has to do with the end of prophecy? So Greece presents a new type of challenge to the Jewish people. It's different than idolatry. Until this point, what was our main battle? It's Avodah Zarah. All the Nevi'im are battling Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah. This isn't classic Avodah Zarah. It's a battle between a man-centered approach versus a God-centered approach. Are we worshiping man or are we worshiping God? And perhaps you can argue that the spiritual method of fighting idolatry was through what? How do we fight idolatry? Who's our leaders? Are the Nevi'im, the prophets. Now it's a different challenge. It's a completely different ball game, and prophecy is not going to work. So what do we need to fight against Greek wisdom? We need wisdom. We need our own wisdom. We need divine sages. We need divine wisdom. So we need, if that's true, we also need a new type of leader. The Navi's not enough. We need somebody different. And Shimon HaTzadik is this paradigm of the new leader. To quote Rabbi Lau, who I mentioned to you last week, who has his book, The Sages. Again, I will probably be quoting him a lot. So he has a good quote in the book. He says, the character of Simon the Just is an attempt to depict the watershed between the old world and the new. between the divine spirit and the spirit of man. So Shimon HaTzadik is this watershed. He's the tie between, he still saw prophecy. So he knows the old world. He knows what it was like when we still had prophecy, but he brings that experience to new challenges. Now he takes what he has learned from when he grew up to now face the new challenge of Hellenism and whatever that brings with us. So a good paradigmatic source that brings this out, source number 4 and 5. Source number 4, if you flip the page, the Gemara Megillah says, "B'masni satana lo ma'astim," and the pasuk says, "I have not rejected them." So Hashem's saying that he didn't reject us. How does he prove to us that he didn't reject us? So "B'mei kastim," in the days of the kastim, when I raised up for them Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So the fact that Hashem gave us these leaders in the time of the kastim, that proves that he didn't reject us. "And neither did I abhor him," so "lo ga'altim," I didn't abhor them. What is that? How does Hashem prove to us that he didn't reject us, he didn't abhor us? "In the days of the Greeks, when I raised up for them," who? Shimon HaTzadik. And then later on, the Chashmonaim and his sons, Matisyahu, the Kohen Gadol. So here the Gemara is saying that this is your leader. The proof that Hashem didn't reject us or abandon us is that he gave us this leader who was ready to take the new challenge of what the Greeks posed to us. And if you look in source number 5, here's a direct encounter, another one between Shimon and not a Greek person, but a Greek idea. So the Gemara in Nedarim says, "Detanya Amar Rav Shimon HaTzadik." Rav Shimon HaTzadik said, "Miyamai lo achalti asham nazir tamei el echad." I only ate one trespass offering brought by a defiled tear. We're not going to deal with what all the korbanos deal with, but we're just going to look at the story. So pam achas, here's the story. Ba adam echad nazir min adorim. So this nazir came from the south. Ra'isi shu yafei naim v'tov roi. So he sees this beautiful Jewish guy. He was a Nazir, and he had beautiful eyes. He was good looking. He had beautiful locks. He had beautiful curls. Amartilo, I said to him, "Bini, mara isa lahashka es saarcha zehana." If he's a Nazir, eventually he's going to have to shave off his head. He's going to have to shave off his hair. So what made you possessed to shave off this beautiful hair that you have? This is beautiful hair, right? So my son Yosef is 2 3/4. So we don't have the custom to do an upsharing. I have no Hasidish blood in me. But we still haven't cut his hair yet because his hair has these beautiful, you know, gold curls. So it's like, you know, why would I be possessed to cut off his hair? So eventually we'll have to do it probably right before his 3rd birthday. So we preempt the need to make an upsharing, but either way. So he's asking, why are you going to cut off his hair? Why are you going to cut off your hair? So Amarli said to me, "Roa yisila abi b'iri." So I was a shepherd for my father in the town. "Halachti lemalos mayim in a mayan." So I went to go take out water from the well. "V'nistakalti b'voashali." And I looked at my beautiful reflection. "Upachazala yitzri ubikesh l'tordani min ha'olam." And I had a sense of, wow, I'm a good looking guy, right? And when he had that sense of, wow, I'm a good looking guy, he got really scared. So he's like, now I have to be a Nazir, now I'm going to cut off my hair. "Amartilo, Rasha, lamatam isga ba'olam she'eno shalcha." So I said, I think he's saying to his reflection, why are you being misgaya? Why are you becoming arrogant in a world that's not yours? Your body's not even yours. "B'mishu asid lios rima betole." You're eventually going to be worms and you're going to go to the ground. There's nothing to be misgah. There's nothing to be haughty about your body. So avoda she egalas kol shamayim yad amati minashakativ al rosha. So Shimon HaTzadik gave him a big kiss. "Amarti lo b'ni kamocha yarbu nozri naziros b'Yisrael." You are a good Nazir. You're a good paradigm of a Nazir. What's going on behind this interaction? Right? So Shimon HaTzadik, notice, he doesn't say, you should cut off your hair right away, right? So, you know, it's like you, whenever you go to school and your hair gets a little bit long, so whoever is in the school who's in charge of your, you know, your looks will tell you, you know, it's time to cut your hair. Shimon HaTzadik doesn't say it's time to cut your hair. He's actually shocked that he wants to cut his hair. There's beauty in your hair. So he's not recoiling from this concept of human beauty. I think that if he recoiled from the concept of human beauty, I'm not sure he would have been a good leader during this time. If he was so if he just had this reactionary view that we can't have anything to do with this. Shave your head all the time because we can't appreciate the body. That would have been the wrong response. He appreciates the beauty of the body, but he notices and he learns this lesson from this Nazir that's not good enough. You can't just have that. If it becomes some level of arrogance, then you have to stay away from it. I once heard somebody was interviewing an Amish person, and apparently they don't do any sort of group plays or any singing, no concerts or anything like that. Why? There's a big musser in this. Why? Because maybe when I'm performing, I'm going to have a thought of Gaiva. I'm going to have a thought of how great my voice is or how great of an actor I am. And because of that, they stay far away from that. And you see, I think that's the message here too. I'm not saying we shouldn't do plays and we shouldn't speak and we shouldn't do anything. But if there is a thought of Gaiva involved, then all of a sudden it's not a Jewish thing. Now it's more of a Greek worshiping the human body thing. Or worshiping the human mind thing. That's not us. Everything goes and starts and stems from God. So I think that's a great example of Shimon HaTzadik confronting the world around him. Again, to quote Rabbi Lau, he remains keenly aware of the distinction between the beauty which adds splendor to the image of God in man and that beauty which can turn a person into a god in his own eyes. Rabbi Sachs has a beautiful line in an essay on... I'm sure he has it in a bunch of books, but it's in Covenant Conversations on one of the parshios that deals with the Mishkan, where he distinguishes the Greek view and the Jewish view. He says that the Greeks emphasize the holiness of beauty, and the Torah emphasizes the beauty of holiness. Right? So that's Shimon HaTzadik. There's beauty. We're not denying beauty. But it's beauty of holiness. It's beauty of your neshama. It's beauty. It's not a beauty that centers around worshiping the human body. So Rav Shimon is the last of an era in so many ways. Besides for being the last of the Anshei Knesset Gedola, he was the last Kohen Gadol to be looked upon as a leader in both the spiritual and political realm. After him, the priests and the sages had differing agendas. Right? And we get to a lot of politics that gets on where you have Kohen Gadols who have no right to make any sort of spiritual decisions because they're basically just there because they paid off the next guy to be able to be the Kohen Gadol. Shimon HaTzadik is the last paradigm of somebody who's both a spiritual and political leader. The Kohanim served this political function and the sages were focusing on the spirituality. I think we're going to end this part with source 6, where you see, we're not going to see the whole thing inside, but you see that the Gemara brings out that this was an end of an era in terms of the role of the Kohen Gadol. The Gemara says, Tanur Rabbanan Arbaim Shana Sheshama Shimon HaTzadik. So Shimon HaTzadik was the Kohen Gadol for 40 years. So when he was a Kohen Gadol, the Goral, the lot that they used to take on Yom Kippur, would always come up in the right hand. And from that time on, sometimes it was the right hand, sometimes it was the left hand. And if you go through this whole Gemara, it's basically the point is all the cool things, all the divinely inspired coincidences or good luck, to use a probably improper term, that happened during the times of Shimon HaTzadik. Once he died, then all the nice things that happened in the Beis HaMikdash, all the miracles that were happening in the Beis HaMikdash, stopped. So there was still Beis HaMikdash going on, but it didn't have that added bonus of having some spiritual leader behind it. We'll take a question in a moment. And then culminating in all this, Rabbi Lau, in source number 7, takes all of this historical background, all of this character, all of this context, and brings it to the fore in his analysis of this Mishnah and Pirkei Avos. Shimon HaTzadik, source number 7, confronted the cultural torrents threatening to submerge the land of Israel. Like the Dutch boy who used his finger to prevent the flooding of the dam, he too attempted to forcefully maintain the old world. The Torah, remember, Torah, Avodah, Gemilas, Chasadim, that's the three things. The Torah that he, together with the other men of the Great Assembly, had received from the prophets. The temple service that connects Israel to their Father in Heaven. And the acts of loving kindness which liberate man from idolizing himself and compel him to acknowledge his true essence. So this is Rabbi Lau's analysis. I added a little bit or took away a little bit here and there. So the good stuff, give to him. The bad stuff, question me. But I do encourage you to look it over, and he has a beautiful analysis that you can get even more from. I didn't quote every single thing. I'm going to take a question in a moment, but just to prime you for the next part, you don't have the source sheet until the end. So I guess get ready that second source sheet that you have, which is a photocopy from Rabbi Yehuda Levy's book, Torah Study. which I believe I quoted him a week ago or 2 weeks ago from a different context, but we're going to get to that soon. The next thing we're going to do after I take questions is do a close read of this Mishnah with a lot of other different sources, which I will just quote to you briefly. You don't have the sources. We're not going to look at them inside. Yeah. Right, so Dr. Pander is saying that physical beauty was never part of our thinking. Avram never recognized Sarah. The Arba Minim, it's Hidur for the mitzvah. The Beis HaMikdash is beauty for the sake of the Beis HaMikdash. True. And that, I think that's the point, is that we do recognize beauty in the context of holiness. When it comes to mitzvahs, when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash. Outside of that, there's really nothing to talk about. Which is interesting, what the Hava Mina was of Shimon HaTzadik. Meaning, what was he going in thinking... Presumably, he didn't think that this guy's long hair was inherently, you know, beautiful. Maybe he thought that even the human body as it represents God is important, right? So we do want to dress nicely. We do want to dress with respect. We do want to comb our hair. We do want to shave. We don't want to look disheveled because we represent, there's a Gemara that says that, I forgot who it was, maybe Hillel, rings a bell, I'm not sure, went to go to a... I think he went to go to take a bath or something like that. He was basically doing self-care, and his response was, I'm taking care of my body, which is, you know, representative of, you know, of God. I'm saying this is, not that I am God, but I have to take care of my body because that is representative of that. Look like him. Yeah, so he's quoting another source of a sage who sat outside of a mikvah so women would look at him and say, I hope my son looks like him. Again, we would have to deal with all of those in context to try to understand that. It is a relatively strange Gemara at face value. I don't think it was revealed from Azaka, but it might have been. I'm not sure. Okay, quick questions. Yeah. Why weren't the Nevi'im up to the task of dealing with Hellenistic values vis-a-vis and just biblical values? I think that, again, maybe they were, and maybe this was an ancillary thing. Maybe my analysis of saying that this was a new sort of, that it wouldn't work, maybe overstating the fact. But I do think, meaning if you think about nowadays, you have a debate in a university with somebody who has, you know, these... To some extent, these Greek values, you know, these, you know, philosophical values, you know, they don't believe in God necessarily. And now you're trying to have a debate with them. And you say, the prophet says that this is the right thing for you to do. There's no, they don't have to acknowledge that divine prophet part. And then there's no discussion, right? You're talking about two different things. If I can take wisdom from the Jewish tradition, now I can have a dialogue with you. You might disagree with me, and you might say, I don't agree with you on this point, that point, whatever. But we're talking the same language. We're talking about taking a wisdom of you know, what does it mean to live a good life? What does it mean to do all that stuff? I think that you can have a dialogue that way. Not taking religion out of the equation. You're taking listen to me because God told me to listen to you out of the equation. Not that we don't do things because God told us to do it. But I think that it's easier to go on that level. You're talking the same language to some extent, with differences, and we got to know what those differences are. I think that answered it. Yeah, quick.
I guess, I don't know if this is getting there for this, prophecy didn't seem to be working. I mean, prophecy ended with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. After ignoring one Navi after another Navi, for the most part, they just weren't listening, and I don't know why we would think that it was 100 years later.
Right, so prophecy had its challenges people didn't listen to. And I quoted last week the Pasuk in Amos, which says basically, you know, you say you don't want prophecy, you don't want to listen to the prophets, eventually that's going to happen, right? So, fair point. Okay, Shlomi, you had something? Or? But then at the end he has to shave it. That's part of the korban, he has to shave it. So basically you're growing it Almanas that I'm going to shave it soon. Okay? All right, good. So let's hold questions for a second. I want to give you a close read of some of the parts of the Mishnah. So if you go back in the source sheet that you have, I guess if you want to see the Mishnah again, you could go back to source number one in that sheet. So we spoke about his historical context, the fact that he was part of the Shiari Knesset HaGedolah. Let's focus on what he actually said. So he said, Al Shlosha Dvarim HaOlam Omed. The world is Omed. We'll have to see what Omed means. We'll have to see what Olam means. Right, so what does it mean, world? What does it mean, stand? And then we'll have to understand what is Torah, what is Avodah, and what is Gemilas Chasadim. So basically, we have to, if you want to do a close read, you have to know what all these things are. So, Olam. What does Olam mean? World. What world? Okay, so you have different commentators say different things. The Meiri says it means the world of Klal Yisrael. The Jewish people rely on these three things. The Magen Avos says that it means the actual world. The world relies on these three things. Without these three things, the world either, we'll see perhaps a little bit later, wouldn't have been created. The world needs these things are essential to the creation of the world, or are these things essential to the maintenance of the world? So that's a discussion. And then finally, I think the most relevant for us to take home to possibly do some sort of changes in our own personality, the Teferis Yisrael and Rav Chaim Palagi and others all say that the Olam means our Olam, our world, our own personal world, our internal life. It relies on Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. So what does it mean, Omed? Okay, so again, does it mean that the world was created or was it sustained? Different opinions, we're not going to get into that too much. But some cute readings to take home is that, again, this isn't, I wouldn't say this is the pshat. This isn't what Shimon HaTzadik meant. But Omed could mean, the Mevaser Tzedek says, that for these three things, people don't strive. They're Omed. They stop. They're happy with the minimum. You contrast it to money. When it comes to money, nobody's ever happy, right? Oh, kesef, oh, yisba kesef. You always want more money, more money, more money. You always strive to do more, do more, do more, do more. For these three things, the olam is omed. People don't strive for it. So it's a musr that we should try to strive for it. So Shimon HaTzadik was complaining, basically, that we're not going above and beyond for these spiritual things. The Divrei Avo says that the olam, again, it's a little bit of a critique of us, the olam, meaning the world, is omed, is waiting for us to do these things, right? So the Olam is waiting for us to do these things. And then finally, on a more positive note, for these three things, we should be Omed. Meaning that if we're busy, we're running around, and we are tasked with an opportunity for Torah, like coming out to a Lox and Learn on Sunday morning, or Avodah, to go Daven, or whatever Avodah means, which we'll get to in a few minutes, or Gemilas Chasadim, we have to stop. We have to be Omed, stop what we're doing, and go and do it. So three cute reads. I wouldn't say that that's pshat, but I think it's three nice lessons. Okay, so that's Omed. What about Torah? So what do you think Torah means? The world relies on Torah. So what is Torah here? What does the word Torah mean? Does it mean learning Torah? Does it mean keeping Torah? Learning for the benefit of going to Hashem. Maybe it means both. Maybe it means... Right, that's true. And maybe it also means Kabbalah Satorah, the fact that we accepted the Torah, that actual historical fact is what the world relies on. So again, different commentators take different places on this. You could argue either way. If it means Torah means following the Torah, then it's redundant to then say Avodah and Gemilas Chasadim, because Avodah and Gemilas Chasadim is included within Torah. So therefore, it's a little bit hard to say that Torah means just keeping the mitzvot. It could mean learning Torah, or it could mean, again, Kabbalah Satorah, the acceptance of the Torah. But if it means Kabbalah Satorah, then you have a problem. Maybe. And this gets into a bigger picture of what the purpose of Pirkei Avos is. If it means Kabbalah Satorah, what's the message for me? The world is omed on Kabbalah Satorah. Okay, thanks for that historical fact. But who cares? Right? So Tosos Yontif says that it can't mean that, because there has to be some directive here. There has to be some message that I have to internalize. So Torah can't mean there was a historical fact that we accepted the Torah. Torah means we have to do something. So the Olam's relying on Torah, so either go learn or maybe, again, go do mitzvos. What about Avodah? So what does Avodah mean? So service, worship, classically, what does it mean? What is it referring to? So classically, it refers to sacrifices, korbanos. And the question is, if... Right, so maybe prayer took that over, but you... some commentators deal with the fact that if it actually classically means korbanos, and you're telling me the world relies on it, and now there's no more korbanos, so why is the world still around, right? So there's various different options. One is, like Jake said, is that avoda transformed or at least took on a more central meaning in terms of tefillah. So our tefillah is what it relies on. The Tosfos Yontif says that it means avoda as in korbanos. But there was enough time, the time the, you know, the 800 or whatever years, 830 years the Beis HaMikdash stood for, was enough of a reason to have sacrifices for that 830 years that the world was created for that. So really, avoda, if that's the case, avoda is not even relevant now. It's just saying, again, a historical fact that we once had the avoda and the world was good enough just for those avodas.
See,
again, the point that would say that that opinion is saying it's a historical fact. It's
but
that
it can't be because Pirkei Avos, as you said, is for us to improve our...
Perhaps that's the debate. Meaning, you could say that way, which I'm inclined to, saying that there is some message of improvement.
That's what
it's
I
not, but it's not necessarily true, right? So as we go through Pirkei Avos, keep this in the back of your head. Are we? Is every single thing we're going to read be like, oh, that's a take-home message for me? Or is there a philosophical point? Is there a historical point? Is there some other message besides just a personal growth point? So it's a debate. I'm more inclined to say, like you, that it means some sort of growth, but that opinion would obviously disagree. Alternatively, it can mean that we read, there's a medrash that says this, when we read the parshios of korbanos, that itself is what we're talking about. So as we're going through all the korbanos and we're going through all of it and we're like, why am I doing this? I don't get any of this. We don't have korbanos anymore. We should think to ourselves that actually, if you take this line of reasoning, the avoda that we're reading now, that we're learning about, is what the olam is omed on. Okay, so it transforms a little bit as to, you know, the parshios that we're going through at this point.
Did they have tefillah at the time of the
korbanos? Did they have tefillah at the time of korbanos? Yes, but it wasn't centralized. And it wasn't formalized. So they did. People prayed. I mean, Avram prayed. People prayed for forever. Chana prayed, right? We learned prayer from Chana. But in terms of the formalized, it came afterwards. And finally, the Sfas Emes says, "Who said you need all three of these together?" I think it's an important point. So the world is omed at Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasad, and we're assuming you need all three at the same time. Sfas Emes says it's not true. You could have one, and then a little bit later you could have the other, and a little bit later you could have the other. And as a historical point, I think it's fascinating because what the Sfas Emes argues is that, and think about this from a historical point, we transitioned from the Beis HaMikdash, which is Avoda, to more Torah, right? So we're going from the Beis HaMikdash to the worlds of the sages, like we spoke about last week. So maybe it was like there's a historical point where Avoda is really important, and now there's a historical point where Torah is really important. And the Sfas Emes says that with the coming of the Arizal, now we transition from Torah to Gemilas Chasadim, and we're on a verge towards the sort of culmination of the building of Mashiach coming. Is that we're now on this third stage, and maybe we're not doing a good enough job if we buy into this point of transitioning well into the Gemilas Chasadim realm. Maybe we have to work on the kindness that we do for others. But as a historical point, he's saying that now that's what we have to emphasize. One second. Ironically, or amazingly, or beautifully, so the Vilna Gaon. So as you know, many of us know, there was a big debate, is putting it nicely, between the Misnagdim led by the Vilna Gaon and the Chasidim, but the Vilna Gaon actually says the same point. He says that Torah and Avoda were the past, and now the emphasis is also on Gemilas Chasadim. That doesn't mean we don't learn Torah, doesn't mean we don't daven, but in terms of the emphasis, the Vilna Gaon and the Sfas Emes both agree that the Gemilas Chasadim is really the main emphasis. Let me keep going for a few minutes. We'll take questions at the end because we are going to run out of time shortly. We'd start a little bit late, so you can bear with me if you want. If you have to go, go. So Gemilas Chasadim. So we spoke about Torah, we spoke about Avodah, we spoke now about Gemilas Chasadim. Why is it Gemilas Chasadim plural and not singular?
You have to do many acts, not just one. You have to do it to many people, not just one.
Okay, so that's possible. The Rambam says that it actually is talking about there's two different types of Gemilas Chasadim. There's Gemilas Chasadim of our body that we do with our guf, that we go help people out, and you know, with our time, with our energy, with our strength. And then there's Gemilas Chasadim of money, whether it's Pidyon Shvuyim or even Staka can be incorporated onto this. So there's two types of Gemilas Chasadim. As Ferris Yisrael adds a third part, and the psychologist in me likes this part. He says that there's a third type of Gemilas Chasadim, which is Gemilas Chasad of your Seichel, which means by helping people through, you know, guiding them, you know, advice giving, stuff like that, is a third way which you can give, you can be Gomel Chasad. So three together, that's why it's plural. Finally, the Be'er Avo says, why is it plural? Because who benefits from Gemilas Chasadim?
You,
the person who get, who does it, and the recipient. So that's why he argues it's plural. Ein lam shir good. So we're gonna perhaps, if we have time, get to that in a moment. Let me do some triage here because we're gonna run out of time. Is it three three together? We spoke about it a little bit. Why three things? So the three things refer to three aspects according to some mafarshim. The Maharal and Rav Chaim Pelagi say that. There's Bein Adam, like we said last week, there's Bein Adam Makom, Bein Adam Chaver, Bein Adam Atzmo. Torah represents, and you could fit some of these into either category. The easiest one is Bein Adam Lechavero is Gemilas Chasadim, even though you could also argue that's good for me too. But, you know, they're all good for me. Torah, perhaps you can argue, is Bein Adam Atzmo. The more I internalize Torah values, the better it is for me and my life and my well-being. And Avodah is the Bein Adam L'makom aspect. So these three aspects are represented within these three things. Just to leave you with a thing, we have two more things to do. This I'm just going to make as a point. Are any of these more important than the others? So this is a big debate. Are these three equal? Or is Torah take precedence of Avodah? Does Avodah take precedence over Gemilas Chasadim? Does Gemilas Chasadim take precedence of Avodah, etc.? You can argue in various different ways. We'll save that perhaps for a different time. I want to close with that last sheet that you have. Okay? I think this is a fascinating idea.
By
Rabbi Yehuda Leo Levy. So, getting back to what Dr. Panzer just said, in terms of these are the three things that Ein Lahem Shir, there's no limit to the amount that you do them. So if you go, you have page 74, 75, 76, and 77. So start with 75. And we're not going to read all this. It's in English. It's easy to follow, so I encourage you to read it on your own. But the main point that he makes, in terms of, again, what are the priorities here? Is Torah better? Is Avodah better? Is Gemilas Chasadim better? They're obviously all important. He says, guess what? It's a choose your own adventure. It's a pick what you're good at. And that's the message of Chazal. If you look at, again, page 75, in the middle, moreover, it's I think the second full paragraph, moreover, our sages have suggested in the Agada that the establishment of priorities and mitzvos depends on personal disposition and talents. Just as people differ in their personality traits, so too do they differ in their obligations regarding mitzvos. And he quotes a source for that. If you go to the next paragraph, in a dramatic illustration of how the choice of vocation depends on individual and his abilities, our sages have taught us that any student who sees no signs of success in his learning after 5 years will never succeed. This moved, I'm not sure all teachers would agree with that 100% wholeheartedly, but there is truth to it. This moved Rav to tell his son, Avu, I have toiled with you in learning and nothing has succeeded. Come, I will teach you the way of the world, right? At some point, if it's not right for this kid to be a Torah scholar, you got to go teach him something else. And that's not a bad thing. We all have different avodas. We all have different points. The Netziv in the bolded off, what's it called? The margin, whatever, it's indented, thank you. The form, this is the Netziv, the form of service, a fascinating quote. The form of service to God is not the same for all persons. One occupies himself with Talmud Torah, and another with divine service, and another with doing acts of kindness, but all for the sake of heaven. And even in Torah itself, not all methods of study are the same. Also in fulfilling the mitzvot and performing acts of kindness. Not all those who perform them have the same way of life. And if someone were to ask which is the proper way, the answer is, flip the page, that which graces, i.e. suits the person. The person who chooses will do so according to his own nature, depending on whether he is talented in Torah, divine service, or performing acts of kindness. Rabbi Lau, the Gaon of Vilna, wrote similarly, he who walks in his ways of uprightness fears God. Each person has to walk in his own special way, for people's characteristics are not all the same. And I encourage you to read further and see what he says. But the main point, and I think the takeaway for today, is that Torah Avot, the Gemilas Chasadim, do make the pillars, do make, whether it's, however you understand each word of this sentence, Olam, Omed, how, what's Torah, what's Avot, what's Gemilas Chasadim, the more options, the better, right? Whatever, if there's something that sort of stuck to you, whether today, or whether anytime you're learning Torah, anytime you're davening, anytime you have anything related to Korbanos, anything related to Gemilas Chasadim, not that you don't, not that if you're good at Gemilas Chasadim, you forget about Torah and Avodah, right? It's not an excuse not to daven, although he does have some fascinating things in the next paragraph where he says that you see in the Gemara that some people were better at davening, so they spent 9 hours a day davening, and some people were better at learning, and they were actually exempt from davening. Because their whole day was complete learning. So there is an indication that that's actually true. But I would say we have our minimum responsibilities. We have to daven every day. We have to learn every day, and we should try to do chesed every day. But which one are you going to emphasize? Which one are you going to take more time on? That depends on your characteristics. That depends on what you're inclined to, what you're interested in, and what you're good at. So I encourage all of us that as we, in terms of the self improvement, in terms of internalizing and trying to grow, pick something and run with it. And do something extra on the thing that you like so we can internalize the words of Shimon HaTzadik and really grow and we can, our world and the whole world can rely on these three pillars of Torah, Avodah, and Gemilus Chasadim. We're going to stop here. I will take questions. If anybody has to go, feel free. If you are going to go, please stay relatively silent as you go. I'm going to take only a few minutes of questions because I also have to go to a meeting after this. And I will repeat the questions for those listening on the internet. Yes. Okay. Happy Mother's Day.
We said before that things were historical events. When we had to go to Seder, we say that we experience Pesach as if it was us walking through God.
Right. So the point being is that even when we say that there's a Kabbalah Satorah as a historical fact, or there was a Korbanos as a historical fact, to us historical facts aren't just historical facts. Historical facts, as we read in the Haggadah, are, you know, as we emphasize on Pesach, are things that we need to internalize to ourselves now also. So maybe the answer is that anything, even if we look at it as historically, is really a growth point. Yeah, fine. So Chaim's point, I think, is a fair point. It's a good point, is that we don't just write off everything else if we're good on one thing. And you know, as you said, I wasn't saying to write it off, and I get that. And maybe you're good at everything. Maybe you're a five-tool player, and you can do a little bit of everything, and that's great. I think the message here is that if you're not good in Torah, you shouldn't be down on yourself and think that there's a problem, or think if you're good in Gemilas Chasadim, don't forget Torah. Don't give up on Torah. Try. There's a minimum that you have to do, and maybe you should always strive to do better in all areas, but you should take pride and try to perfect and move forward in the thing that you're really good at. It would be chaval if you're really good at Gemilas Chasadim, and that's what your character is, and that's what you get a geshmak out of, and that's what you get, and you're like, okay, but I got to spend 10 hours a day learning, or else I'm a failure, right? So I think there's truth on we got to find that middle path. Yeah, Karen.
Basically, everybody's given some kind of talent in the world, and we're supposed to.
Right. So Karen's saying that we got to use our talents, and we're all individualized. Right, and try to make the world a better place, whether it's through Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim. Yeah.
As an educator, I thought that, you know,
teachers need to learn this in a broader sense, insofar as we have to understand that children are individuals and they have different strengths, and how to not look at them as all one the same again.
Right,
some kids are going to fail in life because they weren't able to measure up and be competitive with others.
So right, so the educational message. Yeah, the educational message definitely from this is that we got to individualize a little bit. That doesn't mean there's no core, you know, core curriculum. Like, you know, there's, you know, there is something that we got to try to educate our children. But it's tough.
Right. Okay.
Bigger point. Well, we'll keep it for a different time. We got to close here. Thank you guys for coming, and we will see you next week. Happy Mother's Day. Happy Lag BaOmer.
Thank you very much.